Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to Small Biz Talk Radio. This is Lori Leiker. I'm a small business coach in Austin, Texas, but I serve people all over the country and, as a matter of fact, all over the world. You can find me at smallbizcoaching.net. Today, our guest is Laura Pennington. Laura used to be a teacher, but she found a way to make a living as a freelancer, not just as a living, but be hugely successful at it. So today we're going to talk about the question, can you make freelancing your livelihood, and is freelancing a business or a hobby? Welcome to the show, Laura. I appreciate you being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to it.
So you were a teacher. How long ago did you move from being a teacher to doing freelancing?
I started freelancing very part-time in 2012, and it very quickly grew, and eventually I had to leave my day job in 2013, and I've been doing it full-time ever since.
That's phenomenal. I mean, you hear stories about that, but when people hear them, a lot of times they say, well, that can't be true. But in your case, it absolutely is true. What was it that helped you make that jump?
Well, I know from the very beginning of my freelance business, I was very conscious of what money was coming in at all times. I used to keep little legal pads filled with, you know, projects that I had just finished where I needed to be paid, or projects I had booked. So I kind of always knew my rolling amount of money that was coming in, and being really conscious of the goals that I wanted to make. You know, I first set out and said, all right, an extra $500 a month will be great. Whereas, you know, as my business evolved, I've always that amount of money, and being aware of that in the back of my mind helps me know when I'm on track to achieve it and what I need to do to fix it as well.
And that's something that a lot of freelancers struggle with, but more than anything, they struggle with, it's almost like it's an identity crisis. A lot of times you'll talk to freelancers and they'll say, well, I'm just doing this until I get a real job. But really, being a freelancer is a real job.
It is a real job, and that's something that I think some people who are transitioning into this have a hard time coming to terms with. You know, this is a business and you need to treat it as such. I mean, that's true even if you're freelancing part-time. I actually, you know, I accepted another job in corporate America when I left teaching, and I stayed at that job for a year while I built up my freelance business. Now, I was beating my day job income with freelancing part-time, but I didn't want to make the jump of assuming that I could continue to replicate this until I had 12 months of income reports under my belt where I could confidently say, okay, I know what's reasonable for me to make on a regular basis. And I think having those sort of, you know, business things in the back of your mind helps you treat this like a business, because it's not just your job. It's also a company, and it's a brand, and it's so many other things. You've got to have that top of mind whenever you're working for yourself.
What was the hardest thing for you to get in mind when you were, was that this is a real business, or was there something else that surprised you when you were getting into it?
Having never been paid even one penny to write for somebody else, I felt like a little of a fish out of water when I got started, because I had no idea what to focus on. You know, I decided to start as a writer because I'd had a couple of professors in college and graduate school who told me that I was a decent writer. And that was it. That was, you know, I had no training, not even school newspaper, anything. So for me, when I got started, I was writing about anything: bed bugs, weddings, mortgages, you know, tips for dealing with stress after a divorce. I wrote about all that. And then as I went on, I sort of refined my niche and my offering. But that original experience of not really knowing how to market myself, because I was a little bit of a jack of all trades, that was a little bit of it that I had to overcome.
And being a jack of all trades, as you found out, really what that does is it dilutes your power as a writer.
It absolutely does, and it's more work for you and for your clients, right? Because if I'm marketing in 30 different industries, I need at least half that many writing samples. I need to have a pitch that's tailored to every single one of those industries. It's just very time-consuming to keep up with it, whereas if you focus on one or up to three things individually, then you've got materials that are, you know, the best of the best, and you can position yourself as an expert with your clients. And clients love hiring someone that knows their industry and knows their needs. And once I learned that lesson, it was so much easier for me to consistently be predicting my income, figuring out if someone was an ideal client, and growing my business.
And that's a big thing, trying to figure out whether or not someone is a good client, because not everyone who comes to you and asks you to write is somebody that you should be writing for.
That is the number one lesson that helped me go from a freelance writer making a couple extra $1,000s a month to crossing the six-figure mark and staying there. You know, 2014 was the first year that my business hit the six-figure mark annually. And part of it was due to turning people down and firing bad clients. And it sounds counterintuitive to say, you know, you need to tell people no, you need to fire clients. But the only thing we all have the same amount of is time. So if my schedule is filled with clients who are not the right fit, I therefore have to turn down other amazing opportunities because I've already made a fit to someone or a commitment to someone who isn't a fit. So that doesn't really make sense. You know, I focus specifically on working with a certain type of client, and I try to suss out as soon as possible whether this person is the right fit for me and whether truly I'm the right person for them.
And that feeds into, again, treating your freelancing like it's a business, because it is a business. Just as an architect wouldn't necessarily take everybody who wants somebody to draw plans for a house, especially if it's not their niche, you need to make sure that the people that you're looking for in terms of clients are the ones that you'll fit with, not just personality-wise, but in terms of the work that you'll be doing for them. When you were starting your business, did you have a lot of pushback from people around you?
I think I was pretty lucky because my boyfriend at the time, and now my fiancé, was really supportive. I mean, I don't think he thought this would grow to what it was either. He was excited. You know, he was in the midst of medical school and we were on a really tight budget. And so to make that first extra $200, he was like, wow, that's actually pretty cool. But I don't think he expected that it would grow to what it did. But it wasn't something that I really openly shared with my workplace at my day job. I kind of kept it quiet because honestly, I didn't know if this was going to work or not. I didn't really want to share, oh, I've started a business and then have it fail and, you know, deal with that frustration. So kind of my mom knew about it and my boyfriend knew about it, and they were both very supportive. In fact, they were encouraging me to leave my day job much earlier than I did. So I was pretty lucky to have that support. But I was also in a PhD program. And, you know, this was, you know, I had planned my whole adult life to become an educator, taught in Baltimore, burned myself out and realized traditional education is not for me. But I'm in the midst of this PhD program going, do I finish this? Do I try to become a professor? I'm not sure I want to. And my colleagues there, you know, one of them said, writing, are you actually making any money doing that? And then he was kind of shocked to learn that my business was bringing in more than his government job. And he's like, oh my gosh, this is a real thing. So I did get some pushback from my colleagues in the traditional academic world just because they didn't really think it was possible. But that was really it.
And that's something that we're finding too, as the popularity grows, in being able to make a living, earning a living as a freelancer, you find that more and more people are becoming accepting of it. But there are still some that are in the background going, well, when you get a real job, then we can talk. Or, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do when you get a real job. And it's something that we've talked about on this show quite a bit. But really, the focus has to be on making this a standalone business and not just something you're doing until the next good thing comes along.
Exactly. And I think there's always going to be an extent to which people don't understand it. I mean, there's definitely people in my world who don't really understand what I do. They just, I think sometimes they have the perspective that I'm just sitting at home all day, and that's, you know, not true at all. Sometimes I work more hours than I did in my day job, but it's a different, you know, there's a mental shift there. I'm excited about the things that I'm working on. You know, I wake up and kind of jump out of bed because this is what I want to do. So I'm not doing it on someone else's clock. talk, but it's absolutely a business and a job all rolled into one. But it's also my passion as well. And so there's some, you know, multiple different elements going on that have made this, you know, this is the longest time I've been able to do any one job consistently. And I think that's largely due to the fact that it's such a good fit for me, but I've always treated it as a business.
So when you got set up, how did you go about setting up your business? Did you go through an attorney? Did you just kind of wing it until you figured it out? How did you go? What was that process like for you?
Well, I was very lucky because I realized very early on that my target market was attorneys and law firms. So I had a plethora of individuals to choose from. You know, I'd worked for a family lawyer in college. I worked for a personal injury lawyer in college. So I definitely reached out to both of them and said, hey, can you review my contract? Can you make sure I'm doing this properly? Do I need to form an LLC? You know, at what point do I need to be an S corp? All of these kind of general questions. I think as a freelancer, having access to attorneys was certainly helpful. But for me, I think the biggest lesson that a lot of freelancers and new online business owners overlook is the importance of having a good accountant, because that, you know, the accountant-attorney combo is crucial when you are starting a business. It's crucial when you're growing a business. And I know for me, there was a huge difference from taking my W-2 every year and doing my taxes and coming in with deductions and home office expenses and, you know, schedules and 1099s. So I knew pretty early on that the taxes were going to be above what I could handle myself, and literally just, you know, took my box right over to the accountant's office and had them assist me with that, and have continued to rely on that advice. You know, finding the right legal advisor and finding the right accountant for you, because they're not all one and the same, is really, really important.
And getting recommendations for those is okay, but just like you would want to make sure you have the right clients, not every bookkeeper and accountant is going to be good for every freelancer.
I learned that lesson the hard way. I just found the first CPA in my neighborhood my first year that I was freelancing, when I was still doing it part-time. And what happened was my taxes ended up being botched pretty badly, something that took years to sort out with another accountant. Very frustrating. And I just sort of trusted that he knew what he was talking about. And, you know, as I realized, as I was starting to get notices from the IRS and all these mistakes that had been made, I realized, okay, I've got to find somebody who knows what I'm talking about. And I got a referral from a friend for an accountant who does any person who owns a home business or has a home office. And it was really, really beneficial because they said, wow, this accountant didn't deduct enough. And they actually saved me thousands of dollars in taxes because I simply was out of my league. So the right accountant might seem like an expense. No, that is an investment because they can save you money.
And starting with them right off at the beginning of your business gets those processes in place that you need to be able to carry it through for the rest of the year.
Yes, absolutely. It makes your life so much easier. And as a business owner, you have enough things on your plate already. You need to really be focused on how you can take things off your plate so that you're focusing on those tasks where you're in your zone of genius. So for me, that's not doing taxes, or that's not figuring out the legal stuff. So hire other people who that is their zone of genius and they can help you.
And that's another good point, because a lot of times as freelancers, as solo entrepreneurs, we think we need to do all of it ourselves, and really we don't have to. How did you balance that, the need to do everything yourself with making sure that you're not killing yourself doing everything in your business?
That was another one of the major milestones that I passed in my company. You know, I had a conversation with a mentor pretty early on, and it was over something silly. We just moved to a new house. We had a huge backyard. And I didn't have a lawnmower, and I was like, yeah, should I go buy a lawnmower and mow my lawn? It's going to take me forever. It's really hot. And it led into this conversation of, you know, Laura, how much are you charging per hour? Now, how much would you charge somebody, or how much would someone else charge you to mow your lawn? And the numbers were vastly different, right? So for me to pay $40 for someone with all the equipment to come mow my entire lawn and trim all the hedges, and I get the time saved of not having to shop for a lawnmower, maintain it, mow the lawn myself, that was the first time I started realizing the benefits of outsourcing. And so from there, I went to working with a virtual assistant. Now I work with a virtual team that has some, you know, people that I work with every day. And then there's some people that we bring in for specific things like producing my podcast or whatever. But you have to think of that as an investment. You cannot do every single thing in your business. You will drive yourself crazy. You will do it with poor quality because you're tired and burned out. And so as soon as you can start to realize that there are certain tasks in your business that only you can do, there's no doubt, but there are also plenty of things you're probably doing that could be handled just as effectively, if not even more so, by somebody else.
And that formula is key, making sure that you know how much you would charge on an hourly basis. And that's what I tell clients. If you're doing everything yourself, figure out what your hourly rate is and how much time it's going to take you to do something that you're not a genius at. And then figure out how much it would cost you to hire somebody else to do it. If it's less than your hourly rate, you're losing money every time you do it yourself.
Absolutely. I mean, there's not just like the fact that you're, you know, if you're a coach and you're charging even $100 an hour, you're losing all of those hours that you're spending redeveloping your website or doing something that you're not really familiar with. There's also the frustration and the energy that goes into doing things that you don't like that much or that you're not very good at. So it just makes a lot more sense to find somebody else to help support you with that, because then the energy and attention you bring to the tasks that only you can do is much better. And that's delivering better outcomes for your business and for your clients.
Now, as a writer, I know that the challenges of dealing sometimes with clients who aren't really clear on what they want. How do you deal with your clients? Do you have a spreadsheet? Do you have a checklist? What kinds of things, tools do you use to make sure that your clients are getting the best of what you have to offer?
It always starts with an initial consultation to make sure that we are the right fit for one another. I also take notes during that consultation, and that's when I begin my brainstorming process. So whether I'm working on their website or on their blog, I start coming up with ideas. And my goal with my clients, a lot of them are in the same headspace of they're busy business owners or their attorneys, they really don't have time to worry about this at all. They see the benefit of having their content being done. They don't want to think about it, however. So my goal is to get them to trust me as quickly as possible so I can 100% pull this process off of their plate, and it's still getting done and published just as if they were doing it, but it's me doing it. So usually that takes a couple weeks of them seeing that they can trust me, that I'm going to meet every deadline, that I understand the tone, voice, and rules. And then we kind of go from there. And that's part of the reason, you know, I have one client, we're just coming up on celebrating working together for 3 years. My average client will stick with me for 15 months. And that's because I focus so much on getting to know them and their needs. And, you know, I use a variety of different tools to keep track of everything, but working on a recurring basis makes my life really easy because I always know, you know, 80% of what's coming down the pike. So I know what's due for so-and-so next week. And then I'll have one-off projects that I fit in as I have time. But most of my work comes from regular recurring orders.
And how long did it take you from the time you started until you really got comfortable with finding your own niche?
Well, I started to notice a trend in my business a couple of months in, whereas on other jobs that I was, you know, pitching for or being considered for, I had maybe a 30 to 40% success rate. I noticed when I was talking specifically to law firms and attorneys that my success rate was somewhere between 70 and 90%. So the fact that most of my clients were falling into the same category, you know, not on purpose, but most of them were men. They were in small to mid-sized law firms. They were between ages 30 and 55. You know, they'd been in business for 5 to 10 years. Once that trend started to emerge for me, I realized that this was my target market. This was my sweet spot. And that's when I really began to focus specifically in saying that, you know, I'm a legal writer as opposed to just saying, oh, I'm a blog writer, I'm a freelance writer, really started to focus on being a legal researcher and a legal writer. So it took a couple of months for me to realize that, and I've kind of been using that formula ever since.
And having a niche Because no matter what industry you're in, there's always going to be competition. There's going to be five or six other people who are doing similar things to what you're doing, but not exactly the same thing. So identifying your specific niche is so crucial. And trying to do it up front is almost impossible because there are so many different directions you can go.
And the other benefit, like a lot of people go, oh, it's going to take me a couple weeks or months to figure this out, and they look at it as a frustrating thing. I don't see it that way because, yeah, you're going to have some trial and error. The other great thing about it, though, is that you're going to find out what you don't like doing. So there were some projects that I realized I was no good at and I didn't like doing either. So that process of practicing and narrowing down my niche also allowed me to close off some doors and say, forget it, I'm never going to do that again. I just don't like it. And that really helped to eliminate things that weren't the right fit for me. So, yeah, it's a little bit frustrating to go through this process of figuring out what you do best, but it also saves you the headache of committing yourself to a bunch of projects that you end up not liking. You know, learn those lessons early so you can decline them.
And so going into business for yourself is not a one-stop, one-fits-all. It's something that you really have to pay attention to. Do you find that when you're talking to other freelancers, particularly about their goals and how they're going about starting their businesses, do you find that a lot of them just try to wing it more than anything?
Yeah, I think one of the most common mistakes for new freelancers is that they're focused a lot on the monetary aspect of their business. And don't get me wrong, it is important to bring in money. This is a company, this is how you're going to pay your bills, et cetera. So it's definitely very important. But when you project yourself in that manner to your clients, they can sense it. And it comes from a place of desperation rather than as being of service or giving really high value to your clients. So you've got to take that seriously from day one. Like, even if you're going, oh my gosh, I don't have enough clients, I really need to increase my client workload, don't inject those kind of statements or even that underlying fear into your conversations with potential clients, because their primary goal is hiring the right fit for their needs. So you always need to be focused on providing value.
And really focus on what you do best as part of, it sounds hokey to say, but you're really marketing yourself. A lot of people are scared away from the term marketing, but that's really what you're doing. You're telling people what you can do and setting expectations in such a way that they'll feel comfortable giving you their money.
Yeah, I think I've seen this again and again as I have helped other people hire freelancers. I've managed digital teams for enterprise clients like TrueCar and Microsoft. And it's kind of amazing the way that most people pitch themselves in the same way, and it's very, very ineffective when they do it. They focus a lot on themselves and not on what they can provide to the business owner. And even if it's going to be a small job or it's going to be a job you do once and don't hear from the client again, they still want to know that they're partnering with the right person. So switching your perspective from being you-centric to being client-centric will help your conversions tremendously.
And it will also help you in the long run because now you're thinking, okay, this is a business. I really have to get into a business mindset to do this well, because you never know who's going to refer you out. You may not ever do business with that one client again, but they may be a referral time and time and time again.
And even situations where you don't land the business could lead to referrals. So there's been times when someone would contact me out of the blue and I would say, you know, how did you find out about me? And they'd say, oh, so-and-so told me. And I'm thinking, I remember quoting that person 6 months ago, but they never actually followed up and decided to work with me. So never burn any bridges with potentially decent clients, because you have no idea. They might come back into your inbox. They might refer you to somebody else. And that's how, you know, some of my best contracts have come. So you always want to treat everyone as a potential client, even if it doesn't end up working out immediately.
And following up with people that you've quoted also reminds them that you are a professional. And even if you don't get it, again, you're not burning that bridge. You're keeping it active in their minds that you are a professional. And that more than anything will go a long way toward building your business. I can't imagine that you've burned many bridges over the last few years.
Yeah, you want to avoid that whenever possible. And I advocate against that, even in situations where the client or the person may have wronged you in some way, just because you don't want to get this reputation of being difficult, even if it's unfairly earned. You know, there will be times where you'll have clients that you don't really enjoy working with. They might pay their invoices late. They might just be difficult in general. But always handle that situation as a professional. You cannot control their actions, but you can control your response. And it's not worth burning a bridge, even if you think that they deserve it, you know.
So we're getting close to the end of our time. If you were talking to someone who's new getting into freelancing, what are some top tips that you would give them?
Well, first of all, I'd encourage you to spend a lot of time developing your work samples and your pitch. And that's true no matter what kind of freelancer you are. A lot of people getting into it are very excited to land that first client and to start pitching to people. But clients are not going to pay attention to you unless you have amazing work samples and a really good pitch that convinces them that you're the right one. So more time should be spent on that than anything else. A website is secondary. You know, all these other elements are really secondary. But your work has to speak for you effectively. So that would be my first tip. And my second tip, you know, we've talked about that a little bit already. Not every client is the right fit for you, and it's okay to say no. It's okay to let someone go when you've outgrown the opportunity or when they're no longer right for your business model. It's scary to do that. It's scary to be the one saying no, but it can also help your business tremendously. And, you know, my third tip is something that I implemented from day one, and that's just always know where your business is at. So what are your annual, you know, revenue goals? What are the monthly amounts that you're typical for bringing in? How are you going to enhance those goals and achieve them in years and months beyond? Always be aware of where your company is at now and where you want it to go, because it's very easy to slip into the day-to-day aspects of running a business, but you should always know where you're headed.
Excellent points, all of them. And especially being a professional, if you treat your freelance business like a business, because it is, then you'll have all of these things at your fingertips. You'll know where your business is because you're thinking like a business person. You'll know who your best clients are, what your demographics are, all those kinds of things because you're treating it as a business.
Absolutely. The easier, your life will be much easier if you implement all of those tips from day one rather than trying to incorporate it and overcome some bad habits. So even if you've only landed your first client and it's only $200, that's okay. You know, include that as part of your business perspective. You know, that's where you're starting. It's not going to be where you end.
Excellent points. Thank you so much, Laura. I appreciate you being here. Where can people find out more information about you?
All of my writing advice is housed on sixfigurewritingsecrets.com, and that's all spelled out.
So sixfigurewritingsecrets.com. Perfect.
Yep.
Thank you so much, Laura. I appreciate you being with us.
Thank you so much.
And we've been talking with Laura Pennington. You can find out more at sixfigurewritingsecrets.com. She's a freelance writer. She's got a great business growing. And really, if you're a freelancer, it's so important to take her advice. Treat this like a business because it is a business. Join us next week. We're going to be talking with an expert on business and ego. And it's going to be a really interesting conversation because as business owners, our business is us. And so especially for small businesses where we're the ones who put the blood, sweat, and tears into it. We want to find out, we're going to find out how to better manage our own egos when it comes to our businesses so that we can grow. I'm Lori Liker. I'm a business coach and consultant. You can find me at smallbizcoaching.net. I'm also on Twitter at smallbizcoachtx. And on Facebook, you can find me on my page, Small Biz Coaching. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll be here next week. You have a great weekend.